This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff. Even if you don't need your shoes repaired, you might want to pay a visit to Graham's Shoe Service in Waynesboro just to see the place and meet its people. Graham's is a shoe repair shop, a museum, an emporium, and an experience all under one roof. The people who operate Graham's, David Young and his 20-something daughter and apprentice Yvonne, have turned their place of business into a kind of magic kingdom, stuffed to the gills with stuff and the stories of stuff.
Oh, you want me to start it? Okay. My stepfather was a coal miner in West Virginia, and we moved to the factories of Cleveland when I was five. And we traveled all over the place, graduated from high school on my 18th birthday from my 18th school, and then I hitchhiked around for 6 years or so all around
Why?
The country.
Just to see the country?
Just to hobo around. Just because that's just what I did. I just hoboed around. And then I, one day, when I was 24, I was down in Fort Lauderdale checking out spring break. And I decided to go to Memphis to pay homage to Elvis. So I actually had enough money to buy a train ticket. I got on the train, and we had a three-hour layover in Nashville. And I got off the train and walked up to Centennial Park up on West End Avenue in Nashville, and I stayed there 10 years. And I still haven't been to Memphis, but I plan to go sometime to Graceland. I ended up in Nashville in 1978 when I was 24. And I stayed there right almost 10 years. And I still have a lot of friends there.
Now, what kept you in Nashville?
Songwriting. I started writing songs when I was I started writing poetry as a very young, as 10 or 11 years old. And then started writing songs when I was in my teens. And then I heard a fella named Bob Dylan one time, and that was the end. He inspired me a lot back then, and I started writing songs, and I've written thousands of songs. I have about 8 CDs out now, and I'm going to give you one before you leave here.
It took a while to do it. I did it all myself. I always knew it would happen, so did everybody else. If you just keep on trying, it's bound to come naturally. Now, sure enough, here I am, right where I ought to be. I finally got myself a record in Nashville, Tennessee. They had me in the paper, they put me on TV. Yeah, I finally got myself a record, but it ain't the kind you're thinking. Hey, I didn't get it singing songs. I got it driving and drinking.
What was your life in Nashville like?
It was great. I'd never lived anywhere that long. I'd never been anywhere and stayed in one place that long. And I still love it. I made a lot of my lifetime friends down there that are still my lifetime friends. I just played a lot and wrote songs and learned how to do Irish routines and just all kinds of stuff. I did everything from washing dishes to construction work and played a lot of music and wrote a lot of songs.
So it's the music that kept you there.
Oh yeah, definitely the music.
You only love me when you're drunk. Let me buy you one more round. The one you're on seems to have shrunk. So hurry up and drink it down. I'm getting lonely by the minute.
And I have a tremendous amount of work. As you can see, it's everywhere. But I came in here, I was a tree climber, and some folks didn't like the idea because it's so doggone dangerous, but that's why I liked it. One day my mother called and said there was a help wanted sign in the window of the shoe repair shop. when after my stepfather died in 1983 while I was in Nashville. She went back to West Virginia and lived there until a few more years, and then she moved here because I'm here and some of my brothers are here. So
there was a help wanted ad for the shoe repair.
This shop right here. And I walked in here and took the sign out of the window and laid it on the counter. And I said, "You don't need this sign anymore. I can work here. I can do this." And they asked me if I could fix shoes, and I said no, but I can learn how to do it. So I really worked for next to nothing for a month or so. And I had a teacher apprenticed for 6 months or so. And then, unfortunately, he passed away. And
what was his name?
His name was Jeff. Jeff Graham was his name. And he passed away right around Thanksgiving that same year, 1992. And I've basically taught myself ever since.
What's involved in fixing shoes?
Oh my goodness. It's a lot, and it's not really a short apprenticeship. It's actually, I had a short one, but only because my mentor left me. But it's a bare minimum of a 2-year apprenticeship. And in the old days, it was like a 7-year apprenticeship. Which, not by old days, I mean not that far back, a couple of decades, for hundreds of years. There's a lot of details. That's what keeps a lot of people from becoming masters at it, because there's too doggone many details.
You had been a rolling stone for the first 40 years of your life. How come you stuck at Graham's?
Well, I'm kind of like my grandfather. I really like the idea of working for myself. I'm not sure that it really matters whether it's shoe repair or not. Honestly, it could be painting ping pong balls. I just got to own the ping pong ball company. And I would like to say, too, that in case people get an idea why there are not very many cobblers left. Most people think it's because of a throwaway society. But if that was true, why do I have so much to work on? The reason there are no shoe shops left, or very few, what happened was, beginning in the 70s, a whole generation all at one time just said they weren't going to do that.
They weren't going to be cobblers.
They weren't going to be cobblers. And it was time for Uncle Johnny to retire, and little Bobby didn't want the store. That's how I put it. And so now we've had, two generations that just didn't want to do it. And so there's no shoe shops. And that's... I got into it late. See, I was in my late 30s before I even started. And this is usually something you start when you're very young.
You come in here, and it says Graham's Shoe Service on the door.
It does.
And then you come in.
That service is a big, big word now. We take pride in it. Service is something that people need service. And I think that's becoming a little less and less. Also, service.
Now, what is service to you?
Service.
When you say you do give service, what does that mean to you?
Just try to be really upfront, really honest about, like, for instance, if you brought me a pair of shoes that, and I said, well, how much did you pay for them? And if you said, well, I paid $25 for them, and it would cost you that much to fix them. It's not really worth it. It's honesty about the whole thing. And, it's doing as little as it takes to really fix something and do a really great job at it and have it worth it. It's got to be worth it to you and worth it to me. And it's about honesty and helping people. Yeah, all right. For instance, I don't want to really name names, but I will say this, that it's because of people who are really good to me. In other words, they come in and they're not wearing $20 shoes. They're wearing shoes that cost a lot of money. And they, for example, maybe want some handmade leather heels that cost $30 instead of $15. It's because of people like that that makes it possible for me to do, like, free work for, say, a single mother or a kid that needs an orthopedic lift on a shoe, and they ain't got no money. It's hard out there. It makes me happy. Makes them happy, makes me happy. Doesn't hurt anything.
Maybe I just need them. Maybe I'm just crazy about this lazy kind of freedom. Anyway, I got them down in my rambling shoes, like Willie and Woody and Merle. I got the rambling blues.
You know you're in a shoe shop, but it's like kapow. I have to tell you, my office is renowned for its clutter. I seem to have to work in chaos.
Well, it's just not messy. It's busy. Really.
I feel right at home here.
Yeah, you know? That's good. That's good. That's good. You got to look close. I mean, you can miss something. There's a lot of really nice artwork in here. And
there's clothes. Mm-hmm. There are shoes that look as though they're not here to be worn.
Yeah,
there's books. There's toys. How do you decide? Is it for sale? Is all this?
There's some things. If there's something you're interested in, you ask, and I'll let you know if it's for sale. But some of it's not. But I really want to show you what I think is the most interesting thing in here,
all right,
as far as all this stuff, okay? This is, speaking of shoes, and it's really kind of ironic that I end up working on shoes and orthopedics and things like that, because the lady who sat in this wheelchair, she sat in that, it was my great Aunt Clara. That's her in all those pictures there. Those are her last pair of shoes made by the Cinderella Company, which is still in existence in New Jersey.
And they're ruby slippers.
They're ruby slippers. She never took a step after the age of about 6 or something like that. You see in that picture there, her legs are crossed over, one over. That was permanent from the childhood, from scarlet fever.
Oh, wow.
And her father had this chair made for her in Ohio, and she sat in this chair from 1899 to 1965, 66 years. And in 1917, the reason for all these telephones here, I collect phones, and that one right there was her personal phone, that little...
Can you describe it?
Yeah, that I guess that probably phone there is probably from the late teens, okay, something like that. But the reason I collect the phones is because you can see in the pictures there, she's sitting at a switchboard. Well, in 1917, there was lots of strikes all over the country. And one of the biggest and important ones was a telephone operator strike. Telephones hadn't been around all that long, and telephone operators were very, very important. Well, they actually snuck that switchboard into her living room in 1917 when she was 29 years old, didn't hire handicaps then. But they put that switchboard in her house, and she was our hometown telephone operator from 1917 to 1962, 45 years. And that's the reason that I collect these phones here. Because, for one thing, she invested in Bell Telephone and just got filthy rich. And she helped a tremendous amount of people. She helped a whole lot of people. Probably, I would say for sure, the least handicapped person I've ever known. And I've been writing about her for a long time. I write a column in a little local paper called Open Roads, and I've been writing about her now since last October. Every month, it's
she's
an ongoing story.
She's very important
story.
To you, isn't
very
she?
Important to me. Yeah.
Did you see a lot of her growing up?
Oh, she loved me. She loved little Davy. I used to stand on that little step on the wheelchair there, and she'd ride me all around the house.
Meet Yvonne, David's daughter, who's also his official apprentice.
I was kind of on an art path, which I still am, but I started going to college and I saw so many students having a lot of trouble finding jobs after graduation. So I decided to put college on hold for a little bit and learn a skilled trade that I was already interested in, you know.
Now why?
Well, I had, you know, been in here all my summers growing up. Save money on babysitters, basically, you know. And I liked it. I would be in here. I had a Kool-Aid stand in the summer and a hot cocoa stand in the winter. But around 6, I was just for fun shining shoes to help him. When I was around 10, I was really interested in that sewing machine over there. So I started kind of playing around on that thing, making little coin purses and stuff. I mean, at 5 or 6, I would draw pictures, go next door to the appliance store. They would make free copies for me, and I'd sell them for a penny. Pictures for a penny, and people thought it was cute. So, yeah, I was his little entrepreneur. I was always coming up with some kind of business, something creative, always.
What I'm hearing, your dad had this energy that went into wandering, and you have this energy that goes into projects?
Yes.
Yvonne Young is crowned with a fine set of dreadlocks. Since I've always wanted to know what goes into creating dreads, I asked her.
You take a chunk of hair, like a bunch of hair, and you section it all off. just like you would with like multiple braids and that kind of thing. Basically, you back comb,
like
you twist.
Tease.
Yes, just like teasing, except harder. You're making it so that it is all tangled within itself. And about once a month or so, you go through, and if you don't have particularly curly hair, especially, you get them all straightened out and then rub the scalp whichever direction your cowlick goes, if you have one, you know, the little swirl, and it actually trains your hair to grow in tight little curls like that and mesh together.
So do you you never brush your hair out? You
no.
just wash it?
Can't brush
it's wet?
It. Right.
And
it takes about 8 hours to dry, and that's if I'm out in the sun. It's a lot of rinsing. It's kind of like this, you know, coming out of washing it, but grab them all and wring them. And I had heard this before I even got them. I got them because I had gotten a perm. Me and my mom decided to do an at-home perm together as a girls' night. And she got these tiny little rollers, and my hair was not expecting that. And it was like big 80s curl, like big, big. And it started dreading itself. You know, it started getting matting up in the back and stuff, no matter what, all the products and everything. I was like, okay, I don't want to use any more products in my hair other than natural only. I don't want to fool with this because I was about to go on a month-long backpacking trip in Europe. I didn't want to mess with my hair. Doing that, though, I didn't realize how much work dreads are, especially in the beginning. They're a lot of work. But, you know, I like them. Before I got them, I had heard they kind of become your babies or, you know, a part of you completely, more so than your hair normally would be. And also, at the same time, it lets you let go of that vanity of hair. That's it. Like,
I recorded that. I hope that's all
that's
right.
That's totally fine.
Totally
that's fine.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
All the songs so far in this piece have been written and performed by David Young, and I might add, truncated by me. Just before I left, David sweet-talked Yvonne into singing one more song and accompanying herself on the ukulele.
Up there on the mountain, sitting on a front porch swing, picking on a flat-top guitar, another pretty song to sing. Another pretty song to sing. Mountain laurel, sing your pretty song. Your wandering bluebird soon be coming home. And I'm thinking of sweet laurel, eastern Tennessee. Chase my dreams around the world while laurel waits for me. She learned it from her mama, she learned it from her pa. She learned it from the morning rain, listening to it fall, listening to it fall. Mountain laurel, sing your pretty song. Your wandering bluebird soon be coming home. And I'm thinking of sweet laurel, eastern Tennessee. Chase my dreams around the world while laurel waits for me.
Oh, I love it.
Yay! Yay, I'm glad he made me do that.
Yes.
You'll find links and photos relevant to the Graham Shoe Service experience on the Spark page at WMRA.org. Back after a break to talk with three guys from our community farm in Rockingham County.